It is Thursday, July 16th. The news today is moving fast and, frankly, getting a little weird. Let's get you up to speed on what actually matters. The Department of Justice is shifting its core function. President-elect Trump has nominated Pam Bondi for Attorney General. Todd Blanche, pronounced B-L-A-H-N-C-H, has been confirmed as Deputy Attorney General. Both men served as his personal defense attorneys. This move signals a transition from the department acting as an independent legal institution to becoming a tool for the executive branch's political agenda. The risks here are structural. When the DOJ moves from independent counsel to a model of total subordination, it loses its presumed neutrality. Courts that once gave the department the benefit of the doubt are moving toward skepticism. If judges start labeling government actions as purely political, the institution loses its ability to secure convictions. It's a classic case of institutional rot. You trade your credibility for a short-term win, and then you're stuck with the bill. This isn't just about legal strategy. It's about how institutions eat themselves to protect a narrative. Look at the death of Army Ranger Pat Tillman. The military leadership intentionally suppressed the fact that he died by friendly fire in 2004. They burned his uniform, and they fabricated a hero story to keep public support for the war from tanking after the Abu Ghraib, a pronounced A-H-B-U-G-R-I-B, scandal. They didn't just lie. They forced soldiers to be complicit in that lie. By prioritizing the optics of a hero's death over the factual reality, they didn't just fail the Tillman family, they destroyed the moral authority of the entire unit. It's a pattern. When an institution is more worried about its image than its integrity, the truth eventually leaks out. When it does, the damage to the organization is always worse than the original mistake would have been. We see this same transactional logic bleeding into the corporate world. Jeff Bezos has pivoted from a political opponent to an ally of President Trump. He's looking to hedge against the influence of Elon Musk, whose proximity to the administration currently threatens to lock SpaceX into a dominant position in the aerospace sector. Bezos's strategy is pure capital allocation. Amazon licensed a documentary about Melania Trump for $40 million and donated $1 million to the presidential inauguration. In return, Blue Origin has seen its federal contract volume jump significantly. It's the new normal. If you want to scale a capital-intensive business in this country, you don't just compete on quality anymore. You compete on how well you can align your corporate strategy with the personal preferences of the executive branch. This is exactly why so many voters are tuning out. The disconnect between elite ideological warfare and the reality of daily life is massive. Swing voters who moved from Joe Biden to Donald Trump aren't necessarily looking for ethical purity. They're looking for stability in an economy that feels rigged. They've reached a point of rationalized cynicism where they expect corruption, so they stop using it as a metric for who should hold power. They don't care about socialism or communism as labels. They care about the price of fuel and whether they can afford childcare. When the political class talks in abstractions while the institutional reality is clearly transactional, voters stop believing the system is meant to serve them. They stop expecting the government to be good and start hoping it will at least be competent enough to keep the lights on and the prices down. That cynicism creates a dangerous feedback loop. Richard Wyrsch Jr., known as White Boy Rick, is a prime example of what happens when the state uses an individual as a disposable asset. The FBI recruited him as a 14-year-old informant in 1984, let him drift into a criminal lifestyle, and then abandoned him the moment he became a liability. They kept him in prison for decades because he knew too much about police corruption. When the state creates an environment where loyalty is performative and the truth is just a variable to be managed, you end up with a system that prioritizes its own survival above everything else. It's a hell of a way to run a country. We're watching these institutions transform into volatile, reactive entities that are less concerned with their mandate and more concerned with keeping the narrative from falling apart. Everyone is playing a game of proximity to power, and the public is just watching the fallout from the cheap seats. That is the state of the Justice Department, but money is moving just as fast elsewhere. Here is how the AI infrastructure game is changing. The AI infrastructure build-out is shifting from specialized bank loans to institutional credit markets. Hyperscalers and AI labs now account for over 10% of the investment-grade market. Because banks cannot keep up with the speed of these investments, developers are increasingly turning to high-yield bonds and offtake agreements. These agreements allow firms to guarantee demand, bypassing traditional construction lending, while keeping the flexibility to refinance later. It is a massive structural change. We are looking at a $2 trillion capital expenditure cycle that is fundamentally altering how debt is distributed. The rise of private credit and asset-backed finance, like loans secured by graphics processing units, creates a complex web of risk. Investors have to perform some serious forensic accounting to figure out where the actual liability lives, especially when you factor in the risks of technology becoming obsolete. That is just the start of the bottleneck. The focus is moving toward the power grid, which is a different beast entirely. Unlike tech giants with massive balance sheets, utility companies require junior subordinated debt and complicated tax equity structures. It is a much tighter, more regulated environment, and it is introducing a totally new risk profile for anyone looking to put money to work in this space. The market is starting to crowd. AI-related issuance is approaching 15% of total credit products, which is squeezing other sectors. If these construction projects face delays, the current protections, which assume rapid, easy monetization, are going to be put to the test, which honestly is the kind of scenario that usually results in a messy repricing of risk across the entire ecosystem. Meanwhile, a quiet tug-of-war is happening in the enterprise world. Companies are moving away from centralized, generalist models toward open-weight, specialized solutions. They are tired of the data paranoia that comes with sending proprietary info to third-party providers. They want to own their learning pipelines, and they are willing to trade state-of-the-art performance for models they can actually control and fine-tune on-premises. Think of it as a shift from buying a service to owning an asset. Organizations are realizing that the evaluation framework and the fine-tuning tools are more valuable than the base model itself. Some firms are betting on the Microsoft path, taking the easy route through a trusted, integrated ecosystem. Others are going the independent route, using tools like the Inkling model from Thinking Machines Lab, TML, pronounced TML. It is not without its own pitfalls. Fine-tuning creates a persistent cost, a hidden trap of ongoing data curation and engineering maintenance. If generalist models keep scaling as fast as they have been, all that custom infrastructure could end up as expensive technical debt. But for now, the industry is betting that specialized integration beats general intelligence every time. We see this everywhere, even in the hardware. Developers are moving toward tactile, physical control interfaces, like the Codex Micro, to manage complex AI coding agents. It is the same logic as the new, washable robot hands from 1X. The industry is decoupling the software from the environment to gain more dexterity and control. They are trying to move AI out of the server rack and into the real world. Of course, none of this happens in a vacuum. The semiconductor industry is locked into a multi-year, heavy capital spending cycle that will run through at least 2030. TSMC, pronounced TSMC, is pouring $265 billion into United States factories. It is a pivot away from the efficiency of centralized production toward a more expensive, geopolitically hedged model. It is also getting harder to build physical infrastructure. New York has placed a moratorium on data centers requiring 50 megawatts or more of power. We are seeing a real, public pushback against the environmental and utility costs of these projects. When you add that to internal political fractures at companies like OpenAI, and the fact that agencies are using AI exemptions to bypass transparency requirements, you realize the era of unchecked growth is hitting a wall. Corporate America is trying to power through the uncertainty. Banks report that companies are borrowing to fund actual, tangible expansion, not just playing games with speculative arbitrage. But that momentum is being tested. The geopolitical situation in the Middle East is moving from diplomatic posturing to enforcement-based conflict. If those trade routes are disrupted, even the most efficient AI-integrated infrastructure in the world won't be enough to keep the engine running. It is a hell of a tightrope walk. Infrastructure is one thing, but stability is the new goal for the giants of tech. Netflix is starting to look a lot more like your electric company. Netflix is shifting its business model. The company recently reported two consecutive quarters of slowing sales growth and revenue forecasts that missed analyst expectations. To adjust, Netflix is prioritizing share buybacks, expanding its advertising tier, and exploring new content formats like live sports and video podcasts. Look, it is a hell of a pivot for a company that sold itself for years on being the cool, disruptive alternative to cable. Now, they are essentially trying to become the cable company they once spent a fortune to kill. It is not an accident that they are leaning into stock buybacks and operational efficiency. That is the universal signal that a company has run out of new ideas for how to actually capture the market. They are no longer selling the dream of infinite growth. They are selling the safety of a utility. The core problem is simple. Netflix is struggling to keep people watching once the buzz around their big-budget hit shows wears off. While Squid Game Season 2 was a major viewership event, the platform is finding it harder to maintain that momentum across its entire library. Without that consistent gravitational pull, they are losing ground to platforms like YouTube that have already mastered the art of keeping people glued to a screen all day. This is where the strategy gets a little messy. They are trying to fill the gaps in their schedule with podcasts, live sports, and short-form video. It is a desperate swing at the attention economy. They want to be the place you go for everything, not just the place you go for a prestige drama, which, honestly, sounds like a great way to dilute the brand until it is just another generic aggregator of content. The company is also pulling back on how much transparency they offer regarding viewership data. They are reporting those numbers less often. That is almost always a tell that the numbers are not looking as good as they would like. Investors are noticing the gap. They are now filling that void with third-party guesses, which naturally adds a layer of uncertainty to the company's long-term health. It is a weird position to be in. Netflix is betting that if they just offer enough stuff, any stuff, they can stabilize their audience. But by moving away from their identity as a premium destination, they are jumping directly into the ring with platforms that are already much better at the always-on game. If they can't turn their massive library into a daily habit, they are going to be forced to compete on price and volume. That is a shitty place to land for a company that once prided itself on cultural relevance. They are trying to rewrite the rules of their own business in real time. We are going to find out pretty quickly if they can actually pull it off or if they are just slowing down, putting on a suit, and hoping nobody notices they stopped being the disruptor. It is a defensive play. It is safe, but it is definitely not the same company we signed up for a decade ago. Stability is fine for a streaming service, but it is a death sentence in professional sports. Argentina and Spain are proving that the old way of doing things is officially over. The World Cup final is set between Argentina and Spain. It is a collision of two distinct footballing philosophies. Spain operates as a disciplined unit, using possession and a high press to control the pitch. Argentina relies on collective problem-solving and a high-intensity style that has neutralized higher-rated European squads throughout the tournament. The match will be played on a pitch with a history of poor surface quality. This might actually favor the physical, disruptive style of the Argentine squad. We also have a 30-minute halftime show, which is an unprecedented variable for international football. It provides a physiological rest that could help older players, or it could give Spain the time they need to adjust their tactics if their initial press fails. Here is the thing about this final. It is a stress test for two different models of success. You have Spain's algorithmic, collective dominance against Argentina's adaptive, high-stakes resilience. It is a hell of a battle to watch, especially when you consider that systemic cohesion is currently winning out over the star-centric models we see in teams like England or France. Professional soccer organizations are facing a different kind of systemic constraint when it comes to roster management. Clubs like Gotham FC are aggressively signing players over the age of 30. Data shows that attackers usually hit their peak performance between ages 22 and 25. Most players see a sharp drop in production after this physical peak. This creates a massive financial and competitive risk for any front office. Organizations often mistake the sustained excellence of generational outliers like Marta or Christine Sinclair for a general rule. They ignore the support structures, like playing alongside elite young talent, that allowed those legends to remain effective. It is a high-stakes bet against biological norms. These teams are essentially trading their future flexibility for a very narrow, present-day window of dominance. Moving from the pitch to the court, the NBA is facing its own set of systemic issues. The league office is currently looking into potential cap circumvention regarding Kawhi Leonard's free agency. There is also the matter of Gary Trent Jr., pronounced Junior, signing a 4-year, $64 million contract with the Milwaukee Bucks. That deal followed a minimum salary contract the previous year, which has led to questions about pre-existing side agreements. If the league does not issue a substantial penalty for these kinds of moves, it creates a moral hazard. It tells every other franchise that the competitive gain of acquiring talent under the table outweighs the risk of a minor fine. It is a credibility crisis for the league office, which is struggling to keep up with the creative, high-stakes maneuvers used by front offices to bypass salary cap rules. The volatility we are seeing in sports isn't just about contracts or tactics. It is about the environment itself. On July 16th, wildfire smoke recently forced the cancellation of the full race card at Woodbine, a major venue, along with cards at Thistle Down and Colonial Downs. These environmental issues are a stress test for track operations. The industry is also dealing with a lack of a clear leader in the 3-year-old horse racing division. We are seeing a spread-the-wealth effect, where the talent pool is shifting away from traditional venues like Monmouth Park toward tracks like Colonial Downs that offer better turf allowances and competitive conditions. For the professional handicapper, this environment is becoming increasingly difficult to navigate. You have high-frequency computer-assisted wagering groups, or call groups, that cause late-stage betting spikes just before the gates open. It creates a market where individual bettors are constantly fighting against professionalized, automated strategies. The takeaway here is pretty clear. Whether it is a soccer club trying to manage an aging roster or a racetrack trying to survive a climate-related shutdown, the organizations that win are the ones that prioritize agility over tradition. If you are tied to a standard model because that is how we have always done it, you are going to lose. The system is changing, and the teams and tracks that refuse to adapt are running out of time. Systems are breaking everywhere, from the pitch to our personal habits. Here is a quick look at what else is on the radar tonight. A few other things worth knowing today. Low-price strategies are a quick way to kill your own business. They attract clients who demand the most support and refuse to follow basic rules, which just turns your operations into a total disaster. Screen-based media is actively making us dumber by killing our ability to deep read. If you cannot focus long enough to get through a book, you are losing the mental hardware required for complex thought. Traffic jams are physically wrecking your body. Research shows drivers stuck in gridlock hit blood pressure levels of 142 over 87, which is a hell of a jump from the standard 123 over 78. Uber is buying Delivery Hero because they have finally admitted customer loyalty is a myth. In the app world, people just chase the cheapest delivery fee, so the only way to win is to be the biggest player in the room. Reputation attacks are getting smarter and dirtier. People are now using fake digital evidence to spook institutions into cutting ties before anyone even bothers to check if the claims are actually true. Quantitative investment models are beating the guys on Wall Street by taking the human ego out of the equation. They scan thousands of stocks to find companies with actual value, rather than just chasing whatever the analysts are hyping this week. Remote relationships are getting a massive, if slightly weird, tech upgrade. New haptic devices now allow couples to sync physical sensations in real time, which is one way to keep the spark alive when you are living in different time zones. Finally, if you want to save your brain from long-term decline, try the Norwegian 4x4 workout. Doing 3 intense interval sessions a week physically alters your hippocampus, and the protective benefits can last for up to 5 years. That is the wrap for tonight. Get some sleep, and we will do it all again tomorrow.